The Monty Show, Friday, November 9th, 2018. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing okay. Big night for Jake today. Tonight? On Friday night?
Hello.
Same thing?
Hello.
We'll talk about that. We have got six big locks for you in college football and in the NFL. Big NFL news, big Chicago Cub news today. But first of all, wait, we got to stop the music. I want everybody to know that this has been a tough day for Jake. How are you feeling about your boy's groin being injured? I mean, I know you're such a warrior homer that I was shocked when I saw you grab your crotch on the couch last night, and then I realized that Steph had pulled his groin, and it was just a natural symbiotic movement for you.
It's not as bad as if Kevin Durant got hurt. You know, Kevin Durant's a better player. So
guy, I just said symbiotic, and you blew right past it.
Yeah, I mean,
that was amazing.
You're a professional. I give you a lot of credit. You know, your speech game is strong.
I'm a linguist. Anyway, no basketball. Jake said we cannot talk basketball today because we don't have a lot of time for the show today because Jake has a family dinner to go to. So tell me about the dinner you're going to.
So I really don't know too much about it. The only thing I know is that it's
you were told to be somewhere.
I was told
at
to be
time
somewhere.
And you're going
to
show up.
Yeah, I was told to be somewhere at 6:30. I'm going to get there at like 6:45 probably.
His girlfriend calls Jake and he's like, "Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Of course, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am." And that's how the conversation went, right?
Right. So she was just like, "Hey, you know, we got this family dinner. Like, I really need you to be there. Like, it's important." And I was like, "Okay, great. It's at 6:30. Well, I really asked you to make it till 7, so you moved it up a half hour. It's really going to crunch me. Like, okay, well, if you're late, you're late, I guess."
She'll make it up to you later, right?
Yeah, I mean, hey, there's things that got to happen in life.
It's a price you pay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right. Okay.
I'll stop ball busting now. Hey, a couple stories out of the NFL I think are important to talk about today. Specifically, this Dez Bryant injury. If you didn't hear about this, this sucks. Dez Bryant finally gets a shot. And whether you like Dez Bryant or not, I think this is one of those situations where you just have a lot of compassion for him. He had waited all year for the right opportunity. He finally gets the right opportunity with New Orleans. And on the second to last play of practice today, Friday, November 9th, he's running as a scout team receiver against the New Orleans defense, and he pops his Achilles tendon. He is out for the year before he ever even played a game. What is your reaction to that?
I just think it's the worst case scenario. And I mean, anytime, and it always happens this way, right? Like you sign a big stud or somebody comes back from big injury and it's like the second to last of the last play before practice is over and they're running with the freaking scout team on field 10, you know, to field goal 37. Like, it's just like, why are you even running with the scout team, man? Like, I'd love to know what exactly they were doing there.
Well,
but
he's
trying
to get back in shape. He's trying to learn the offense and he's trying to run around.
What I was saying, like, there's a difference between being able to lift weights and then actually being in football shape and taking contact and really, you know, having the ability to, you know, just play football at a high level every week after week. And there's another guy on this list that we haven't really mentioned yet, and that's Le'Veon. Le'Veon's coming back.
Well, same situation.
And he's a running back, so he's going to take even more of a pounding. And so it's just, I really wonder, okay, well, James Conner has to keep the reps up, right?
And Le'Veon's going to have to work in. James Conner's now in concussion protocol.
Yeah, and that's a problem. Yeah. So it's worst case scenario if you're the Saints. Lucky.
Wait. Le'Veon's been playing basketball at 24-hour fitness, so
never mind. I'm just going to leave it alone. I'm going to leave it alone.
Le'Veon Bell has been playing pickup basketball at the gym. You're an idiot. With $855,000 a week on the line. Yeah, let's go play pickup basketball.
Yeah.
With a bunch of dudes who work at the, you know, Jiffy
Petco.
Lube. The Petco, Jiffy Lube, yeah, all that good stuff. But I agree with you. I think this is why you can't believe that you can sit out 9 weeks, 10 weeks, no training camp, nothing, and then just walk onto an NFL field and, oh, yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm the same old Dez or I'm the same old Le'Veon because it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And I have real concerns about Le'Veon Bell because he is a guy who uses speed and explosiveness. And it doesn't have to be, something as catastrophic as a torn Achilles tendon. It's a hamstring. It's a quad. It's a calf.
Little thing.
Yeah, it's muscle pulls because your body's not used to performing at that level. And it's great that you've lifted all those weights and you're playing basketball or whatever. There's nothing that can replicate in-game high-intensity reps. Like, Dez Bryant, you can't tell me he wasn't trying to impress his teammates, even if he was running scout team routes. Can't tell me he's not out there giving his all, trying to show everybody, hey, I'm Dez Bryant. Because you know he was.
Yeah.
And now his season is over before it started. He's out until training camp now, 8 months, and he's 30 years old.
Yeah.
Just heartbreak hotel for Dez Bryant. And then there's Joe Flacco. You know the Ravens are on bye week this week. They have Cincinnati next week. Joe Flacco's in real question for the rest of the season. He's got a hip injury, and I've read everything that says it could be surgery, it could be rehab, it could be nothing, it could be major. But this is my question then. Is it Lamar Jackson time? Because you haven't really let him play quarterback. You've, you know, had him do these odd wildcat packages that I'm not a fan of.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they respect him in Baltimore as a quarterback. But now I don't think you have a choice but to give him the ball if Flacco's hurt.
Yeah, and I still question, why did you even draft him? Because it's not as though he's a pure quarterback who's just sitting behind Flacco learning and kind of taking the Pat Mahomes kind of route.
Yeah.
That's not what's happening there. You're sitting him on the bench, but you're playing him like, I don't know, like 5 to 10 plays a game tops. Like, it just is. It's a weird little dynamic, and I think what will be really interesting is if he comes out and he plays a good brand of football for them and really performs as a quarterback and, you know, has the dual threat and is that guy, that could be really interesting, especially for a guy in Joe Flacco who
it's over.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about how he's, been on the decline, his completion percentage is not where it should be, like, there's real conversation about it, and all of a sudden you put an injury in there, you know, Alex Smith gets hurt, Kaepernick slides in, and the rest is history.
But this is that's interesting, because Kaepernick really did get his first shot when Alex had that concussion. But anyway, what a lot of people are saying is this is the end for Joe Flacco in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And a lot of people believe he ends up with the Giants next year as a 1-year teacher or 2-year teacher to somebody they draft or something.
I could see that.
I could see that too. My question is Lamar Jackson an NFL quarterback? And frankly, I don't know because I haven't seen much of it.
Yeah.
You know, he's an athlete. He's that guy that they list as ATH on all the recruiting, you know, profiles. But we knew what he could do at Louisville. I just have no idea if he can do that in the NFL. So I think that's an interesting story. And finally, before we get to locks, I do want to talk about this Chris Bryant trade thing. If you miss this, I feel like this is a nothing burger. Okay, so essentially, long story short, Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer have been giving interviews at the GM meetings, and they've had the message that nobody is untouchable.
Yeah.
And so one of the national baseball guys did a story that said, well, the Cubs are shopping Chris Bryant. He turned down, because you'll remember Chris turned down a long-term extension with the Cubs, which is not surprising being a Scott Boras client. That's generally how Scott handles things.
Yeah.
But there is some thought that, oh, well, he doesn't want to be a Cub, and all of a sudden nobody's untouchable. And so immediately Theo came out and issued a statement that said, we're fortunate to have multiple, high-impact players, and we're looking to add, not subtract them.
Yeah.
Like, he categorically denied that they are shopping Chris Bryant. And you can't tell me Theo's out there shopping Chris Bryant.
Yeah, I mean, it would just send a complete wrong message. And it's not, again, just he put it perfectly. You're not trying to get rid of the Chris Bryants of the world because there's not many of them around. You're trying to find guys who can be like Chris Bryant, who can play left and right and third and first and, like, can play all these different positions and can also be a force offensively. You know, that's what his value is. He can play. He's good on both sides of the field, and really, there's just not too many people like him. So I highly doubt that. I'm with you. I highly doubt that they're trading him. And I get the people who are saying, well, you could get a lot of value back for him. You could go get an ace with him. Like, but why would you do that? You know, why would you do that? You wouldn't.
The Cubs don't have an offensive problem. They have a pitching problem. That's that they have elite offensive players. KB being hurt all year did not help. Most of the year he battled with this shoulder thing. One other story I do want to get to, because it's been all over Twitter today, is the BYU NCAA sanctions. And if you did not hear this, the NCAA came down hard on BYU's men's basketball program for infractions by a group of boosters who gave Nick Emery $12,000 in vacations, cash, meal, golf, and the use of a car 2 years ago. And here's the problem. Okay, you can defend Nick Emery. I get it. He's a kid. He made a mistake. Okay, great. Nick Emery is no different than Pete Rose betting on baseball. Okay, Nick Emery took these things knowing it was wrong. Because if you're a college athlete and a booster says, hey, why don't you drive this car? Hey, and if all of these things are true, hey, why don't you go on this vacation? Let me send you on vacation. Hey, here's an envelope with some money in it. Hey, let me buy you dinner. You know, as a college athlete, those things are against the rules. I'm not telling you that Nick Emery is some terrible guy. In fact, I know he's not. But I don't feel sorry for Nick Emery at this point. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't feel sorry for his family. I don't. I just don't. Because what Nick Emery did here is he put himself before BYU, before his teammates, and before his family.
Yeah.
What he did here was very selfish. Nick Emery doesn't need the $12,000, right? He is, his family has more than enough money. His brother is a huge basketball player. Jackson was Jimmer's teammate. Everybody knows Jackson Emery. This guy doesn't need the money. This was a very selfish period in his life. And BYU is going to pay for it. They are going to have to vacate games. I think it's 47 games in total. You know, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
They're going to lose a scholarship. They're going to have recruiting restrictions. And they can no longer do business with that booster. I think it's completely justified. Sorry, I'm having trouble feeling sorry for Nick Emery.
Yeah, I mean, you knew it was wrong. I mean, just like, I agree with everything you're saying. Like, he knew what he was doing. I mean, there's just not in question. Like, you knew what you were taking,
man. You knew it was wrong.
I mean, you knew you made the choice. So, I mean, it's at the end of the day, like, now it's time to take the sanctions and move along with life. Like, there's just really not too much else.
Yeah. By the way, Anthony Rizzo just tweeted about the Chris Bryant trade rumors. Quote unquote sources, LOL. Why don't people just own up instead of writing articles for clicks? It's football season. Take a break and chill.
Ooh. Buster, your thoughts.
That's my boy.
Damn.
That's my boy KB. You know. Anyway, it's fine. It is what it
is.
I
like that a lot out of him.
I do too. That's leadership, man.
Fake news.
It drives me crazy. How about his meltdown today? Did you see Trump getting on the helicopter? No, you have a real job. I don't. Donald Trump flew to Paris today to meet with some world leaders. He's getting on the helicopter to go fly to Air Force One. And he just had an unhinged meeting with the media, if you will, or he kind of defended Jim Acosta in the push the reporter gate thing. He claims that they never doctored the video that the White House put out. I don't know how many people saw this. Jim Acosta got into an altercation with an intern in the White House press pool while he was talking to President Trump. She tried to grab the microphone. They say that he shoved her. They put out a video that changes how the incident looked. People called them on it. He said he called it fake news and said that that's embarrassing. He went after a female reporter. I mean, just he came unglued again today. Like, two out of 3 days he came unglued.
Crazy.
Yeah. So should we do locks now? I know that your girlfriend's got you on a short leash and we got to get you out of here. So I can't even say it with a straight face. Like, the day has come where, as a man, I've lost the ability to bust balls with a straight face.
Wow. I mean, you're on a new level tonight, you know?
All right, let's do locks. How about we start with college football? In a game I'm really worried about. Of course it's Notre Dame. Notre Dame hosting Florida State. We, the Fighting Irish, because I'm on the team too, we are a 16-point favorite. The number's 51. There's one thing that really worries me in this game. Well, of course, Ian Book is not going to play for Notre Dame. The quarterback with this rib injury. I was actually watching that game at ESPN last week. I was in Bristol. And when he got hit and he was limping, everybody was like, oh, like it looked bad. he was kind of hunched over. And
yeah.
So it turns out he's got busted ribs, so he's not going to play this week. Very Ruth Bader Ginsburg of him. He is that she's a Supreme Court. I know you don't know anything about judges or anything, but RBG is that's Ruth Bader Ginsburg. RBG. See her and our her and I are homies. Anyway, the point is Ian Book's got some bum ribs, so he's not going to be able to play against Florida State. Work with me, Jake. He's not going to be able to play.
Is Ian Book sitting on the bench with RBG?
With an RPG, this is not Call of Duty. He will not play, so they're going to have to go back to Brandon Wimbush.
That's a problem.
That's a huge problem. But it's going to be 30 degrees and snowing in South Bend for our friends from the great Sunshine State of Florida, Florida State Seminoles. FSU has to throw to win this game, and I don't know that they're going to be able to do that. Brandon Wimbush is going to have to shine for the Irish. The Florida State's 120th in pass defense. And I think that's what makes the difference. Whichever quarterback does a better job throwing the ball, and we don't know who the starting quarterback's going to be for Florida State yet, and we won't probably till kickoff, I think that's what's going to win the game because Notre Dame's going to run the football. But I think this is also one of the better defenses they've faced against the run. 16 points is a lot, and I think they cover it. I think they cover it.
I think at the end of the day, snow games to me are all about who wins the turnover battle because you have to take care of the football. You know, if you're that, you know, FSU's defense is not good against the pass, so that would be great if Wimbush could come in and execute on the pass, but he hasn't really proven to be reliable.
You haven't been a Wimbush guy all year, so I'm going to say that doesn't change. I think you're right about him. This offense completely changed when Ian Book took over. I'm actually going to revise this. I'm going to say they won't cover. I'll go from 34 to 31. I think it's 31-17 because of the snow. So I think Notre Dame wins, and I think it goes under, right? Because that would be 48. 31-17 is 48. So I think they win, they don't cover, and it goes under. I'm going to get Notre Dame the win, but I think they go under.
Solid.
31-17.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a lot of points.
Yeah, that's a ton of points. And I think in a time when it's a snow game, like the weather's going to play a factor. There's going to be a lot of plays where, oh, the wide receiver should have caught it but didn't. Yeah, I agree.
Turnovers.
Turnover. I think it goes under too. I don't think we see a team in the 30s. I think it's probably high 20s. 27-17 feels like a good number to me, but, you know.
Okay, number 18, Michigan State. Number 10, Ohio State. This will be in East Lansing. More cold, more snow. This is Ohio State, a 3.5-point favored. The number is 50.5, 50.5 points. Michigan State's the number one run defense in the country. And they are also the number one red zone defense by touchdown percentage. They're a really good defense, and they're even better at home. And I don't know what to make of this Ohio State team. I think this is probably Urban's, you know, last year at Ohio State. They really struggled to beat Nebraska last weekend at home. It took a Herculean effort to get that done. But I also know that Dwayne Haskins is number one in the country with 32 touchdowns thrown. So we know that they can throw the ball effectively.
Yeah.
I do not have a high degree of confidence. The right thing to do here is to pick Ohio State, in my opinion, because we're picking against the spread. If we were just picking head-to-head, I might even lean Michigan State. Might. But I can't do it. Ohio State, it's only 3.5 points, which in college football is nothing.
Yeah.
I think I got to go Ohio State 30, Michigan State 20. Ohio State gets the win, the cover, and it goes under at 50 points.
Yeah, that's. I think that's solid. I think Ohio State is just a dominant team. I mean, I know there's been some fall off, and they haven't been as good as they once were.
They haven't been as dominant as
they
once were.
Yeah, you know, but I they're still that team. They still have it in them, and I think, what did you just say? You know, excellent defense, can really push the ball down the field, like, they should be in a great place to win this game.
They should win this game.
Yeah, I mean, they really should.
I'm telling you, Michigan State, Sparty is a pain in the ass, dude. And they're at home. Ohio State's got to travel. There is something broken at Ohio State right now that I don't think anybody can put their finger on. This was the single most difficult game for me to pick. And that's why I did such a deep dive on that Michigan State defense and trying to understand schematically how this would match up. And I just think Dwayne Haskins is one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the country, even though he's got the 32 touchdowns and he leads the nation in that category. I'm going to go 30-20 Ohio State, and I don't feel great about it. But that, to me, all the numbers wash out at 30-20. I think Ohio State probably wins, covers, and it goes under. Probably.
Solid.
Please don't bet your money on that game. Oregon at Utah. This is a disaster. The Utes are favored by 3. The number's 53.5. Jason Shelley's the starting quarterback at Utah. You know that Tyler Huntley's out with a broken collarbone for the Utes, done for the year. Zach Moss, the bigger story, he's got this knee surgery. He's done for the year.
Yep.
I don't see any way the Utes can win this game.
Yeah, I think Utah is just in a weird place, man. You can't be so defensively reliant. We talk about this every year. We talk about how they should win the South, and they should be this great team. But at some point, you have to be better offensively. I understand now you've got injuries, and you can use that as a crutch and an excuse. But at the end of the day, your offense wasn't good enough, even at its full strength. It just simply wasn't good enough. And so at this point in this kind of a game, to ask your defense to stop Oregon is kind of a stretch, in my opinion. I mean, I know they're a good defense and they'll do a good job and they'll hold Oregon down.
But they're going to be on the field a lot.
Like, dude, come on, man. Like, you get to the end of the game, I don't see them. They're not going to win this game. I think Oregon wins this game, but they'll put up a good fight.
It's going to be
really
close.
That's who
they
are. I mean, Utah is a team that puts up a good fight but can't win a game at this point.
It's going to be really close. And at home, you have to really give a lot of favor to the Utes. It's Salt Lake City. Rice-Eccles is a very difficult place to play. At the end of the day, I think Oregon wins 28-27 is the score that I kind of spit out on this game. And I think it's straight up just Oregon wins. It's just the worst-case scenario for Utah. They should have won the South. This was their year to win the South. I'm not saying it can't happen. Jason Shelley was terrible in the small exposure we got. You just have no confidence.
Yeah.
You have great depth at running back, fine. You have an experienced guy coming in at running back, great. You have no confidence in Jason Shelley. This should be Jack Tuttle.
Yeah.
Sorry to say that. This should be Tuttle. And I don't even know, frankly, with the way the Utes were handling this, I don't even know that Tuttle would have been the guy if he was here or not. I have no idea. Because if memory serves, he was third.
Yeah.
Shelley was second. So it probably still would have been Shelley. He was terrible. I'm going to take Oregon to win this 28-27. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. It goes over the 53.5 and Oregon wins.
Yeah, I don't see Utah getting into the high 20s. I just don't see that. I think their top end is 17 in this game. I just don't put any emphasis on the offense. I don't think they're going to score more than 20 points. And I think the defense is going to be locked down in the first half. And I think, Oregon's offense will wear them out. And this will turn into a higher point game for Oregon.
All right, let's tell you then that we picked Notre Dame 31-17 over Florida State to win, cover, and that game goes under. We have Ohio State 30, Michigan State 20. That is a win, cover, and under for Ohio State. And then we have Utah losing to Oregon 28-27. It goes over, and that's an outright win for the Oregon Ducks. Let's move to the National Football League. Should we start with the Bears or end with the Bears?
We can start with the Bears.
All right. Detroit at Chicago. 6.5-point favorite, the Bears. That's a lot in the NFL. 44 is the number. They're expecting a low-scoring game. And the weather, again, will be an issue. Obviously, the Midwest is getting cold. Snow is moving in, which it feels a little early as we're only November 9th. But it is what it is. We're looking at temperatures in the 30 with a chance of snow. Khalil Mack is on track to play if all stays well with the ankle. And frankly, the Lions' offensive line last week was terrible, like terrible. They gave up 10 sacks to the Vikings last
week. He's
going to
eat them alive, bro.
Well, if he plays, and the truth about the Lions is they traded Golden Tate. They don't run the ball particularly well, and I think they're going to struggle to score on this defense outside at Soldier Field. I think this is one of those games that just belongs to the Bears. That Lions offensive line has to be better than it was. And here's the other thing. As much as I've ripped Matt Nagy this year, the head coach of the Bears and the offensive coordinator, essentially play caller, I think he's finally figured out the run. Your dumb fantasy football decisions are haunting you because, well, your team sucks, mainly because Tarik Cohen's not on your team anymore. And he's finally figured out how to use Mr. Cohen. And they're starting to rush much better. Their numbers are 158.7 rushes, rushing yards a game the last three games. That's pretty good. And the reason that I think those numbers are up is they are toss sweeping a lot more. They're finding creative ways to get Cohen into space, and that doesn't include the A or B gap. They are keeping him outside, and they're using Howard between the tackles. And it really is a combination that's working. Mitchell Trubisky is finally starting to come to life. His throws are more accurate. His yards per attempt are better. His touchdown percentage, like all of his pass numbers have now really come up. And you're starting to see a little maturation. That means maturity.
Right.
In the offense.
Right.
So now that I've said that, I think the Bears are going to cruise in this game. 34-24. The Bears win, they cover, and it goes over the 44.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Bears will dominate this Detroit Lions team. I just don't know, if you're the Detroit Lions, where you're going with the football. I'm really just having trouble understanding, like, where are you going to throw the ball?
Yeah.
And how are you
Kenny
going
Galladay.
To, I guess. But at the end of the day, he's going to be double-teamed. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So
yeah.
I just think this is classic dominant defense versus an offense who just doesn't have much to work with. So I agree. I think they'll double up the Lions. I could see 34-17 easily. Like,
so let me ask you this then. How good can this Bears team be? Like, if because I think they're going to win this game. Do you buy into the Bears as the NFC North champion?
But Trubisky's going to have to take them that far. Like, he can't like, the improvement has to lead to consistency. You have to continue to play at a high level. You can't regress. You can't turn the football over against Aaron Rodgers. Like, you can't do that.
Well, and he's going to get Allen Robinson back this week, which will help him move the football. I think, you know, I haven't seen the game where Trubisky takes that huge step backward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you are 5-3. You're sitting on top of the North because the Packers have just fallen apart at 3-4-1. This Lions team is 3-5, and they've given up the most points in the division. They've scored the least points in the division. This is a game that you would expect the Bears to control and win.
Right.
And I say that full well knowing that might not happen. You know, you want to see the Bears dominate a football game. And I'm hoping they've left the performances, the Dolphins game, behind. Okay, they lost to the Patriots. The Patriots are now one of the best teams in the NFL. They're playing really good football. We've seen that now. You beat a Jets team that you should have beat. You pounded a Bills team you should have beat. This is another Jets and Bills team.
Yes.
And I want to see them do that. So I'll go 34-24 Bears over the Lions. Again, they win, cover, and it goes over. Seattle at the Los Angeles Rams of Los Angeles. See what I did there? Struggled. By the way, how is your fantasy team doing?
Awful.
Good.
I'll get a win this week, without a doubt. But I'm like 2-7. Like, it's just been a bad year.
If you could take one move back, what would it be?
I would have a higher draft slot and get a running back.
Yeah, I agree. The Seahawks at the Rams. The Rams are 9.5-point favorites. The number is 50 in this game. This is a bounce-back game for the Rams. There's no doubt about that. And they're going to have to figure out who they are this week. After what I think is a really bad loss to the Saints, and I know the Saints are really good, and they were number one in our power
Rams
rankings.
Rams should have won the game. It's that simple.
Peters can't get beat the way he got beat in that game by Michael Thomas. And if that game was played in L.A., I think they win it. And this game's played in L.A., and that's why I think the Rams are going to win it. The Rams defense versus that Seattle offensive line. Now, who are we going to talk about again? Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah.
Can he step up? Can he become a performer? Because if he can't, I think now you have to start asking questions about his worth to this football team. Because I don't think he's shown you that he's worth $20 million a year. I don't think he's shown you that he is still a premier defensive player in Ndamukong Suh. So that's one thing I will be watching here. But do you agree with me? I think the Rams are much, much better than the Seattle Seahawks right now.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I think when we look at this matchup, one question I have is how much of an impact will Chris Carson have? I mean, he's battled injuries. Like, he's not 100% healthy. They're going to need him. But I just don't think, Seattle of 5 years ago, 4 years ago, Legion of Boom Seattle, would have really put up a great fight in this game. This would have been a great game, like very close game. But this in this day and age with where Seattle is at, I just don't think it's going to be that close, because I think the defense isn't what it used to be, and I think the offense is not super dynamic. So at the end of the day, I like the Rams in this game quite a bit. I agree with you. They know that's a game they should have won, and you know Marcus Peters is hunting for blood this week. So I like the Rams in this game a lot. I think it's probably a 35-ish points for the Rams, and I think the Seahawks will be lucky to get 21 or so.
36-21, Rams over the Seahawks. It's a win, it's a cover, and it goes over the 50. I have it at about 57. So I really like the Rams in this game to win 36-21. And our final lock of the week in the NFL, the Dallas Enigma Cowboys at Philadelphia. It's Sunday night football on NBC. It's a 7-point number for Philly. And the over is 43.5. Dallas is 0-4 on the road. Dak's got 8 touchdowns and 0 interceptions against the NFC East this year. Something tells me to pick the Dallas Cowboys in this game, and I don't know what it is.
I don't either.
Probably my stupidity.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I think Dallas is desperate. Like, you have to win this game. If you have any chance, you have to sweep the division. And this is the first of 2 games for the Dallas Cowboys against Philadelphia, so it's clearly an opportunity for you to step up and show that what happened on Monday Night Football last week when you got embarrassed by a really, really subpar Titans team, in my opinion, that was just a blip. Because if you're the Dallas Cowboys, you're going to Philadelphia this week on Sunday night. You are at Atlanta next week. Then it's the Redskins at home, the Saints at home, the Eagles at home. So this is a really important stretch. And you have to win 2 of the next 3 games, and those 2 games are at the Eagles and the Redskins. Can they do it?
I mean, I think they can, but I don't trust Dak. I just simply don't trust Dak in big moments. Like right now, I would rather have Trubisky over Dak. I think Trubisky's playing
Mitchell?
Better football. Mitchell, great.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just think he's playing better football. I think Dak has shown that when he's pressured and when he doesn't really know what to do with the ball, it's Cam Newton last night on the safety play, throwing it into the middle of the field. Like, what
just
the hell are you doing,
ball.
Bro? Like,
from
the
your
ball,
end zone.
Literally, the ball, like, and I was talking to my people about this today at work. He should have never had the ball in the end zone. He should have thrown it away. Like, I was talking to my deep state.
My crew.
Yeah.
My people, my ops team.
Yeah, my black ops team, bro. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what he was doing. But I'm not ready to put Dak at that level. For the best, a lot of people can make the comparison between Dak and Cam Newton, and I just don't think there is. I think Dak Prescott is in a terrible, terrible situation. I think he doesn't have a staff that can teach him to be an NFL quarterback. And I think he has play callers that don't want to run the football. And he's not a guy that can throw the football all over the field and win.
Yeah.
You need to turn around and give the ball to Zeke because he's running the ball really well. And this Philadelphia defense, frankly, has been vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I think they will continue to be vulnerable.
Yep.
I think at the end of the day, this is whoever has the ball last.
Right.
That's who wins this game. And I say that because when I look at some of the defensive schematics, and you start looking at, okay, well, where is Philadelphia defensively? Well, talent-wise, and on the whole, they're probably a top 10 defense. They're probably a top 7 defense. But you start looking at, okay, well, do they stop the run? Well, now they're a top 20, top 15 defense against the run. You got to run the football to win this game.
Yeah.
And I think they will. And I don't think it'll be enough. And I think Philadelphia wins 28-27.
Man, you got a lot of close games Sunday.
Because these guys are fighting for their lives. I have a lot of close games across the weekend. And it's because teams like Ohio State, Utah, Oregon, these teams are fighting for their lives. So I look at Dallas. If Dallas loses this game, their season's probably over. Like the road is steep already. It becomes impassable if you lose this game to Philly. I think clearly at 43.5, I have 28-27. This game goes way over the number. And I think Philly doesn't cover, but they get the win.
Yeah, I agree Philly's going to win this game. I just don't trust Dak, man. I think there's a mistake in this game from him, whether he fumbles it, maybe it's an interception. I think Philly will get after him a little bit. I don't like the offensive line in Dallas. You know, I agree. Dallas has got to run the football. They've got to, early in this game, have got to establish the run. And I think one trend I've noticed, and it's been going on for a while, but the teams that really, you know, give their quarterbacks some easy completions to start the game. Just let your guy get into the game a little bit. You know, like just give him an out route to the sideline to throw, or like just something to get him going. Those teams typically do better than asking your guy to throw a deep ball on the first drive, or like, you know, especially so when Dak is struggling with his confidence. My point is that they need to get him going in this game, and then they need to establish the run, and you need to stay committed to the run. You know, it's going to get stopped early. You're going to have loss of yardage on the run early, but I think you've got to stay committed to it. And if you do,
you will wear out that defense.
At some point they will start to they'll pack the box, and then you can go over the top.
Is there anybody in the NFC East you like? I mean, I don't love Washington. I still think Philadelphia is the best team there. I know New York's the worst team. I mean, really, I think the only team you can hang on to there is Philadelphia.
Yeah, Philly's really the only team that I see could really make any kind of noise this year. It's just not a great division, man. Overall, it's just not.
Like, yeah, it's a down year in that division. Yeah. And by the way, Philly doesn't exactly have the easiest schedule, with Dallas coming in this week for a primetime game. And then at the Saints, the Giants, the Redskins, the Cowboys, the Rams, the Texans, and then they finish at the Redskins. Like, that's for a team that's trying to find itself, that's a meat grinder schedule.
Yeah.
So I think probably only one team gets into the playoffs out of that division, and I don't think it's going to be Dallas. I actually think it's only going to be Philadelphia. So our winners this week, we have the Bears beating the Lions 34-24, and at 6.5, the Bears will win that game. They'll cover, it'll go over. Seattle at the Rams, this should be an easy win for the Rams. I've got 36-21, which again is a win, a cover, and it goes over. And then a real tight one on Sunday Night Football. And they've had some good games, by the way,
yeah,
on Sunday night. Dallas at Philly. I've got Philly 28, Dallas 27. It is a win, not a cover, and it goes way over the 43.5. Okay, you have time to get on your date. You have time.
We did a great job today. And specifically, if I had like great music to play right now, you know, I would play it for you. But I just want you to know, you did an amazing job being efficient with your time today.
And
you know?
I'm good looking.
Anyway, so you did a great job today with the time.
And I'm good looking. Just admit it.
It's fake news.
Who dominated in basketball at the gym this morning?
Me.
No, you didn't. Who dominated in basketball?
Us.
No. Who dominated? Tell the people.
Us.
The public.
Two O's and Goose, man.
Dude, my public has a right to know that I'm a unicorn, man. You know, I'm 6'3" of sexy awesomeness on the basketball court. And you need to give me that credit.
The cred.
This is probably, yeah, this is probably too far at this point. I did win. We played four man 21. And I drilled a deep three to win the first game. And then we had to go, and Jake said next basket wins, and he scored the next basket. Well, I said next basket win, and then you scored the next basket.
Yeah.
But I think I was the best player on the court as usual.
Okay.
Know what I'm saying? Enjoy your date. We'll talk to you on Monday. Say goodbye, Jacob.
Goodbye, Jake.